All right. Well, good morning to you. Some of you know who I am. Others of you do not. My name's David Hartage, and officially my title is Executive Director of the Baptist General Convention of Texas. And this church is one of 5,430 churches that come together to form the Baptist General Convention of Texas. And together, we do mission and ministry work all across Texas and beyond. And thank you, First Baptist Church, for your support of and your involvement with our work. And your pastor, Dr. Ritsema, a good friend of mine, and he actually is the chairman of our committee that plans our annual convention. So thank you for letting him do that. And don't tell him I said this, but he's doing a good job. So just let that be known. Anyway, and I don't know, I forget how long ago it was, maybe five and a half years ago, I guess, now. But I was the interim pastor of this church for about 18 months, and love this church. Kathleen and I are just thrilled and delighted to be back today. So thank you for the opportunity and the privilege. We love First Baptist Church, Waxahachie, and are delighted to be here today. So thank you all, and thank the pastor for the kind and gracious invitation. So I'm going to take you back in history just a little bit, and some of you will remember some of this, and the rest of you will have to go online later today and look all this up. And but I'm pretty close with what I'm going to tell you. So go back with me to the 1950s. And for some of you, you can. For others of you, you're like, okay, I'll have to read about that. But back in the middle of the 1950s, there was a guy. He was sometimes a singer. He was sometimes a comedian. And he was sometimes an actor. And his name was Jackie Gleason. And Jackie Gleason was an actor in a television show. It was back in the black and white days. And the name of the show was The Honeymooners. He played a bus driver. The name of the bus driver was Ralph Cramden. And in that television series, he popularized a number of sayings we still use today. One of those sayings, and he would use this as a response to anything. Good, bad, positive, negative, it didn't matter. His response was often, "How sweet it is." Now, that little phrase, "How sweet it is." Fast forward, 1965. There was a singer named Marvin Gaye, and he released a single, and the title of that was, "How Sweet It Is to Be Loved by You." It rose to number five on one of the Billboard charts. How sweet it is to be loved by you. Fast forward, 1975, James Taylor. He released the same song, just a little bit different version, and it rose to high as number four on one of the Billboard charts. Title was the same, How Sweet It Is to Be Loved by You. Now that phrase, How sweet it is. That is the title of my sermon today. But it's more than just a title of a sermon. That is actually my translation from Hebrew to English of the phrase we're going to look at in the Old Testament this morning. Now, that phrase, how sweet it is, we've kind of shortened that in 2017 and we just say sweet. But that still is a pretty good translation of the biblical text in Psalm 133. Take your Bible, if you have it, and I'm going to read the three verses of Psalm 133, and you can follow along. If you brought your Bible, you can look that up with me. If you didn't bring your Bible, don't worry, I brought mine. And Psalm 133, I'm going to read starting at verse 1. Behold, how good and pleasant it is for brothers to dwell together in unity. It is like the precious oil upon the head, coming down upon the beard, even Aaron's beard, coming down upon the edge of his robes. It is like the dew of Hermon, coming down upon the mountains of Zion, for there the Lord commanded the blessing, life forever. So, how sweet it is. Let's talk a little bit about the general overall context of what the writer of the psalm is saying. He's talking about, initially, a family living together in unity. So you have to go back into the Old Testament to kind of grasp what he's talking about. You will remember there was a man named Jacob. Name was later changed to Israel. And Israel had 12 sons. And those 12 sons became the 12 tribes of Jacob, the 12 tribes of Israel. But before they became those 12 tribes, they were 12 families. Those families became clans. Those clans became tribes. But before all of that, they were 12 families. And he initially is talking about how sweet it is when these families dwell together in unity. How good and how pleasant. How sweet it is when these families can gather together in unity. Now I think, okay, now what would it be like? How would I describe my family living together with my two brothers and their families and my sister and her family? Now what would that be like? So I got one word to describe that: therapy. In the Old Testament, these 12 families became these 12 tribes of Israel. Now, there was a time in the Old Testament, unfortunately, when those 12 tribes, once united, became divided, and once they divided, the rest is a sad story. But while they were together, there are a couple of occasions in the Old Testament where the writer is describing these 12 tribes, masses of people, gathered together in one place, and he's talking about how good and pleasant it is when all of God's people are gathered together in this spirit of unity. One of those occasions is when they dedicated the temple in Jerusalem. David, King David, thought he was supposed to build that temple. He was told, no, you're not supposed to build it. He gathered up all the materials, but his son Solomon built the temple. And when Solomon finished building that temple, they had this dedication. And it is an amazing account in the Old Testament of how thousands of people from all over that part of the world gathered together in Jerusalem. And you read the account, and the best way to describe what was happening in that experience was, it was good, it was pleasant, it was sweet. God's people all together in a spirit of unity. It was good. So you're supposed to say now, how sweet was it? Well, that's what the writer of Psalms goes on to talk about. He said, here's how he would describe it. And the imagery is stuff that we're not familiar with. But let's try to grasp at least what he's saying. He said, it was so good and so pleasant, it was like oil being poured on Aaron's head, down his beard, and running down his robes. Now, that's an imagery we don't really, you know, we think of Duck Dynasty, and that's just, no, it's not all, it's not really a pretty picture for us. But Aaron was Moses' brother, and Aaron was the priest. And whenever the priest was anointed, and it was a sacred experience. So what he's talking about here is when God's people are together in a spirit of unity, that is a sacred experience. How sweet was it? It wasn't just sweet as in a sacred experience. It was like the dew of Hermon, Mount Hermon, flowing down on the hills of Zion. Now what does all that mean? Mount Hermon, a heavy dew, a heavy rain, 100 miles from Hermon to Zion. And it was that flow of water, it refreshed and gave life to everything along the way. So what's it like when God's people are together in a spirit of unity? Let's just take First Baptist Church Waxahachie. What's it like when a church like this is together in a spirit of unity? Same goal, same direction, same focus. What's that like? That is, according to the psalmist, that is like life. And that is sacred. So here's the picture. The psalmist says when God's people are together, it is a sacred, life-giving experience. And he describes it with two words, good and pleasant, which I summarize today as how sweet it is when God's people experience that sacred, life-giving unity. So let's just talk about the word good for a minute. So good, it can describe what we are. It can also describe what we do. Here, I think we're talking about action. So it's good in that we're doing those things that are right for the body. It's good in that we're doing those things that are appropriate to bring unity. It's good in that we are doing those things that are beneficial for the family of faith. How good it is when we are doing those things that are sacred and life-giving for the sake of the body. Everybody here probably, most everybody here probably knows the name Ezekiel Elliott, running back for the Dallas Cowboys, friend of the Dallas Police Department. So let me take you back to last November. Last November, Thanksgiving Day, the Dallas Cowboys are playing a football game. I watch that every year. I watch some of it every year. I may nap during part of it. So last year, though, Ezekiel Elliott, you will remember this, he scores a touchdown. He crosses the goal line. He runs through the end zone. He runs to the back wall of the stadium. And at the back wall of the stadium there in Dallas, on that particular day, there was this large Salvation Army red kettle. You know, you see those little red kettles and the bell ringers in the holidays. Well, this was a giant red kettle, and he runs up to it, and he jumps inside it. Now, so if you're waiting now for me to explain why he did that, then we're finished, because I don't know. I do know that after he jumped inside that, I read in the Dallas paper on Monday that donations to the Salvation Army that weekend skyrocketed. Go figure. Nonetheless, you remember what it says on the red kettle, advertising the work of the Salvation Army, doing the most good. So, I don't have anything against the Salvation Army. Drove past the Salvation Army here in Waxahachie this morning. They do good work. But this family of faith, wouldn't it be great if the people of Waxahachie, when they thought about a body of believers who really do good and are doing that good together, same direction, same goal, same focus, they think First Baptist Church, doing good for one another and for the city and beyond. So, what's the good work we do? It can be identified by being faithful. It can be identified by being in service. Everybody in the church ought to have something that they are doing in service for the family. It can be identified with the spirit of generosity. And certainly that includes resources, but it also includes time and talent. All of that, doing good for the sake of the family. And the writer of the psalm says, that's sweet. It is good and it is pleasant. So if we talk about good in terms of what it is, let's talk about pleasant in terms of what it's not. So pleasant is not negative. Pleasant is not critical. Pleasant is not judgmental. You know, the best way I can describe pleasant is pleasant. It's pleasant. All right, so in my ministry, I have done a lot of weddings. I wish I'd kept track. I wish I'd kept count. You know, I'm guessing around 250. That's a guess. So I will tell you, not all weddings are pleasant. So I'm thinking about one in particular. This was several years ago. I was a pastor of the church at the time. And the wedding's on Saturday evening. And I get there early. I always did. I got there early. And you know, I was walking around shaking hands, meeting people, greeting people. And two of our church members, they come up to me. This is probably maybe an hour before the service. And they're also police officers in our city. And they say, "Hey, Pastor, can we talk to you in the office for a minute?" I said, "Well, yeah, you know, I got a few minutes." So we go to the office, and they're carrying a bag. And we get into my office, and they say, "You know, there's some talk around town." And I said, "You know, there's always talk around town." So, well, there's some talk around town about this wedding, and the talk is that there's some people saying that families didn't particularly get along, and so there's some people saying that one way or another, this wedding is not going to happen. And so with that, they say, "So we think it'd be a good idea for you tonight," and they pull out and hand to me a bulletproof vest. So I'm thinking, so I remember that movie, Dumb and Dumber. You remember that? And you remember they have a guy wearing a bulletproof vest, and he asks the question, "Well, what if they shoot me in the face?" And they say, "Well, that's just a risk we're willing to take." And so I say, is that a risk we're all willing to take? All that to say, I mean, I did wear the vest during the ceremony. I have no idea what happened in that wedding. I was looking around the whole time, like, you know, who is it? Who, you know? Not all weddings are pleasant, but some are. So I think about another wedding. I was the pastor. This family had, several families had moved to our church, moved to our community from Holland. They were Dutch. They were dairymen, great dairymen, hard workers, successful. And a young man and a young woman, they moved with their families, and they'd been involved in the church for a couple of years, and they were just faithful as they could be. Loved them dearly, and they came to me and said, "Pastor, we're going to get married. We want you to do the wedding." So I was all excited about that because they just were great people, and I just kind of got carried away. So I, just right there in my office, I kind of start planning their wedding, which is that's not the best idea. But so I'm thinking all American-like. So you know how we do weddings. We practice on Friday. We get married on Saturday. So I'm saying, you know, I've got my calendar out, and okay, we can do it on this weekend. We can do it on this weekend, this Friday night, this Saturday. And, you know, the more I talk, the sadder they look. So that's not good. And so I finally, this is when my ministerial experience kicks in. I finally say, "When would you all like to get married?" That was a brilliant question right there. And so this is what they said. They said, "Well, in our church back in Holland, we always get married on Sunday morning in front of the church." And so I said, "Is that what you want to do here?" And they said, "Yes." So I'm very Baptist. So I say, "We've never done it that way before." But then I said, "But we can." So I made this promise that we were going to do a wedding on Sunday morning in front of the whole church. So we set the date, and I wait a couple of months before I announce it. You know, because anytime you do something different like that, somebody's not going to like it. You know, people, and sure, you know, if you could say next Sunday, Jesus is going to be preaching here, and somebody in the church is going to say, "I don't like it when the pastor's not there." It's just that, so somebody's going to not like that. Anyway, so I announce it. So we had two services at that church. We had an 8:30 worship service and an 11 o'clock service. So I told the church, the whole church, about, and I kind of led up to it 2 or 3 weeks in advance. I said, "Now on this particular Sunday, at the 11 o'clock service, we're going to have a wedding. If that's something you don't want to happen, then you come at 8:30. We'll have regular church. You come at 8:30. So it gets to that Sunday, 11 o'clock. We had to bring in chairs. Now, I gave a few announcements at the beginning. We certainly took up an offering. I'm not going to miss that. We're like in the second service, we had like over 1,000 people, and I thought, we're not missing this. But after the offering, you know, I slipped out. And I kind of wore a robe, you know. I just got tired of trying to match tuxedos, so I just got a robe, and I just wear a robe. And so I walked back in. The groom is right there beside me. This is Sunday morning, 11 o'clock, on television. He's standing there. They open up the back doors. Swing open the doors. This young lady who's been in our church about 2 years from Holland walks down the aisle. The whole church stands. I mean, it was a Princess Diana moment. And I'm telling you, in that moment, in that church, it was sweet. Because we were all together. And for me, the highlight of the whole service is when I had learned to say, "You may kiss the bride" in Dutch. And when I busted out with that, and I did it right because they knew what I said. But it was a sweet moment. See, when a church experiences that, there was no tension. There was no stress. Nothing felt awkward. It was just right. It was a good and pleasant. It was sweet. And that's what the writer of Psalms says. How good and pleasant it is when God's people are together in a spirit of unity. And notice he uses the word unity, not uniformity. We don't all have to be just alike. And I've been looking around. In this room, we have men and women. We are not alike. In this room, we have people of all ages. We are not alike. In this room, we have people on all levels of the socioeconomic ladder. We are not alike. We don't have to be alike. What God calls us to be is together. And when God's people in His church are together, it is good and pleasant. In a word, sweet.